Hello, I'm called Melanie Sintem, and I am married to one of the people who plays keyboard in many of the churches around here, Brian. Yes, you can clap for my husband. So I think now after this conference, I'm going to find all of you at the market getting your garlic, your oranges, your what. And then on Sunday, we're going to be just glowing in the audience where we can't even see. So we've just heard all of the ways to prepare our bodies of how to make it just be beautiful and natural. And so with our topic of preparing to meet the King, the beautification process, I have something first before I share any more that I'm going to read. That I started writing up actually a few years ago, but then I just finished it like 2 months before Monica had asked me to share. And so I'm just going to read this, and hopefully it will just get your minds and hearts stirred for what we're talking about today. So this is called The Brides. Three brides prepared for their wedding day. Now this wedding was quite different than most. Usually the brides have set the date with their groom, and she would be counting down not only the weeks, but days, hours, minutes, and seconds until that big moment finally arrived. But for these beautiful young virgins, the groom held the wedding date, and it was unknown to the brides. The groom was going away to make ready for the day of this union. He left instructions for them to follow. The instructions for their preparation was simply, prepare yourselves and be ready. The words spoken to each bride were the same, but the interpretation of these instructions was different for each set of ears that it fell on. With each bride, he also left a lantern. The groom left this so that as they walked through their days and nights while he was away, they would have provision to see what was before them and be able to discern the steps they took. This light was vital. It didn't only guide their steps, but it would be the sign when he returned to identify who his brides were in a world full of posers and fakers. He lit each lantern before he went, but it was their responsibility to keep the oil filled in order for the light to burn bright. The groom had a foresight that the women did not. In knowing that when the day came that he should return, many would flock to him in hopes of convincing him that they also were his bride. But the groom now would immediately know without question who his brides were, because they would be the only ones in the crowd, prepared and ready, and whose lights burned bright, displaying the distinction among the rest. As he left them, he turned to them with gentle eyes and said, "Remember, as I am gone, preparing a place for you, many men with sweet-sounding words will try to tell you that I'm not coming back for you. They will try to convince you why their arms are safer than mine. I'll tell you the truth. In certain moments, their arms may look much more appealing to you. What they have to offer to you may be more satisfying in the moment of your need. But I can guarantee you this. What I am preparing for you, our union, our life, it will satisfy forever. Just hold on to my words and know I can never forget my first love." The first bride of the three prepared her things, She set out her wedding attire from head to toe, as if someone was already wearing them. The only thing missing was the body to fit inside. Her perfume bottles were placed just close enough to reach, and any other item she could think of was all close by. Not one item missing, so that as soon as the groom called, she would be ready to slip into the dress. To this bride, she surely thought that she could not possibly be more prepared than this. Prepare yourselves and be ready. That's what he said. For a few weeks, she excitedly waited right next to her things for him to come. But as time kept passing, she grew weary of waiting and decided to venture out, as long as it wasn't too far from where he expected her to be. She never went far. Really, she stayed very close. She never slept with another or got caught up in the worldly things. But still, she was not content with waiting. As she moved out, she left behind her lantern. Though burning, they were inside. And maybe she had forgotten the old prophecy that said, "A light hidden will not be seen." The second bride, however, ran out the door as soon as the groom was out of sight. She went before picking out her dress. She went and found other lovers, lovers in many forms, not just as men, but in the form of ways to satisfy the longing that she very well knew in her heart was set only for the groom to fulfill. The bride saw no problem in living the life to the fullest, with every intention to race back as soon as she heard the word of the groom's return. "Prepare yourselves and be ready. I can get ready fast," she thought. She carried her lantern with her, but only while it benefited her. But then she began to move in dark places where she did not want anyone to recognize she was the groom's bride. So not long after her moving out, she left the lantern behind as well, forgetting it was the most important sign to assure the groom of his bride's. Now you have heard the way two of the three brides acted on the instructions given. Now the last bride, however, acted differently than both. The groom's words echoed in her mind, and she meditated on them moment by moment. "Prepare yourselves and be ready. I cannot forget my first love." She knew in her heart that even though she was not yet home as his wife, she had given her heart to him alone and he to her. So she would choose to live with eyes only for him. He was preparing a place for her so that she could come and join him. She pondered what it meant to be ready. And to her, there was no other option. She put on her dress, she tied her hair with a crown of flowers, and carried with her her lantern. She never moved without oil, because as it burned its brightest, she couldn't be sure of how long it would last or when the groom would pass by, and she didn't dare miss a chance for her lantern to burn out of oil. For to her, being ready meant her hand on the door, waiting to open the second he knocked. At last, the cry rang out at midnight, as if a thief in the night, which no one knew would be coming. "He's here! The bridegroom is here! Come out to meet him!" The first two brides ran to the streets to see if the celebration and shouting was really for his arrival. They both knew now that they had very little time to put on their dresses and prepare themselves. Even the bride who had set her dress out ahead of time had not enough time. When reaching, they saw the one bride at the door of the banquet hall. She was breathtaking. She was ready. She was lit as bright as the day's light with her lantern in hand. The other two brides recognized that both had left their lanterns behind. They ran to her shouting, "Please let us carry your lantern with you. We left ours behind, and even if we had brought them, there is now no oil left in them. If we do not have our lantern lit, the groom shall not recognize us as his bride." But the one bride responded to the others, saying, "I now have only enough for myself, and I cannot miss this moment. He has finally arrived." The other brides scrambled for their things, now wishing, too, that they had been ready. They went as quickly as they could to prepare themselves for the bridegroom. When finally the two gathered their things and prepared themselves, they knocked and knocked on the banquet hall door and made known that they were now ready to be taken in. The groom opened the tremendous cedar doors that led into the banquet hall, and the two brides became weak just at the sight of him, for his eyes radiated with a love that pierced hearts. Even the touch from his one finger stirred in them the desires of a lifetime, and the presence of his body filled every part of the room with a strong, unspeakable power like no other man. They craved for him now deeper than ever before. The craving for this groom touched every part of their body with an ache far greater than hunger or thirst itself. But as he looked down at these two brides, who were now on their hands and knees as if beggars, pleading to enter, words hardly had to be spoken, for his eyes filled with the purest compassion and the inmost sadness anyone has ever known. The door began to close as his words came out, "I never knew you." And he turned and walked towards his bride, now standing at the altar. She was ready, and her lantern burned bright. So, what kind of bride are you? And are you a bride of the groom? So we have our three different brides that were shared. And the first one, what I envisioned when I was writing this, if you remember, she didn't go far. She stayed near to her room and stayed near to her preparations. But she didn't stay. And she didn't prepare herself fully. And that bride represents people who have all of the attributes of a Christian. People maybe who don't drink, they don't smoke, they don't have sex, they don't all of these things, but they go to church and they do all of the right things and follow all of the rules, but they don't have Jesus. So that is the first bride she's representing. The second bride, as I shared, she, as soon as the bridegroom left the room, she went to go find what things she thought would satisfy her. She believed that God's grace was enough, that since she had accepted God and the groom, that she could go and live her life however she wanted to, as long as she knew that God's grace was there. And that's how many Christians live, that once they have said the prayer at the altar, that covers. But the Bible says that God's grace leads us to repentance. It doesn't lead us to keep walking the way that we were, but because of his kindness and love, that we desire to prepare ourselves to be like him. And then the third bride is, as we saw, she, as soon as she knew that she was going to be the bride of the groom, she put on her dress. She wore every part of the wedding attire that needed her to be ready to just walk down the aisle. And that bride represents a Christian who is living in a way that is honoring and pleasing to God, but not just following the rules, but follows the rules because of your intimate and personal relationship with Jesus and with our groom. And then lastly, not mentioned in the reading, but some of us are not brides at all. We're married to the things of the world, and we don't have anything to prepare ourselves for, because those who are living in the world live for today and live for yourself. And so I just want to ask you, of those three brides, which one are you? And are you a bride of Christ? And so going on to just more about like the purification and beautification process of our hearts, I'm going to use purification and beautification in interchanging as the same, because it really, in this situation, does mean the same thing. So before I got saved, I've known Jesus now as my personal Father and Savior for, I think it's now making 6 years. And when I first, before I got saved, I, as a female and a woman in this world, I just felt like I was so complicated for anyone to actually know or desire to know, that I should just simplify myself. I thought that so many times, especially, unfortunately, started relationships and things very young, which just stir up the insecurities and things that we have as women when it's not done in the right way. So how many of you have ever felt that as a woman, that I'm just so complicated, I wish I was more simple? Maybe you haven't felt that, and if you have, I think I'm with you. But right after I got saved, I was in university, and one day I remember just feeling I had so many different emotions going on, so many different thoughts, and I was just crying out to God, saying, why am I so crazy? Why is everything that's going on inside of me, I don't even understand half of it. Can you relate to that? Okay, good. And the Lord spoke so clearly to me that morning, and is something that has changed my life from that first year I got saved. He told me, he just spoke in my heart and said that the complexity and mystery of who I am as a woman is exactly how I am made in the image of God. That those parts of that need to be dug into to know and take time and effort and energy to be known and understood. And even after all of that, there will still be parts that are unknown. That is exactly how the heart of God is. That He is a mystery that we get to continue to dig into and to know. But every time that we find something new about God, we realize how much of a mystery He is, because we thought maybe we understood what encompassed Him. And then we continue to learn more and more. And so that is one of the things that I wanted to share, is that every part of who we are made as a woman, and many of us, there are certain things I'm going to mention that some might have more than others, a certain desire, like, but all of these things are attributes of a woman. So the desire to be beautiful, the desire to be loved, the desire to be protected, the desire to nurture and to love others, the desire to be needed by someone, the desire to be known, and the desire to be understood. Now, if you hear all of those, do you see how those things all are part of God's character and His heart? So, the reason that we have to go through the purification and the beautification process is because of our sin nature. We have all of these desires that are good and right and of God and part of God. But we have to learn how to do them and live them in a way that is holy and that's pure. Like, all of these desires can be used so much for God's glory, or can be, when used just in our sin nature, can lead us to places that are very painful. For instance, the desire to be beautiful. God made us to love beauty and to love to be told that we're beautiful and to love to feel beautiful. Not just our hearts, but the outside. God made you to want your appearance to be beautiful, and that is a good desire. But that can turn into an idol when it is done, when you want the beauty to be recognized by others, or when you want your beauty of the outside to get you to places, or to earn things other than just glorifying God by who He made you. And then the desire to be loved. God has given all of us the desire, great desire, to be loved by man and by people, by friends and by family. And all of those things are good. But when we put being loved by people before the desire to receive love from God, it also becomes an idol and replaces what we want from God. The desire to be protected. All of us, I think, want to feel safe. That's especially a characteristic of a woman. And one of the things we want to flee from pain as much as possible, isn't it? But when we want to run from pain, when it is something that God is trying to use to shape you, it also is a sin. And then I think the others you can kind of just hear on your own, of like, to nurture and to love. That's actually something I will say, just especially for mothers or for really just all women, because whether you're a mother or not, you usually desire that, that sometimes we can put our identity so much in being the caretaker or being needed by someone that our identity becomes that rather than being a daughter of the King. So what does the purification and beautification process look like? So if we have all of those desires, but we want to live them in a way that is not of this world and not of our nature, but that's holy and pleasing to God. So I'm going to, all of you, actually, let me ask you. I'm going to read this verse, and I want you to raise your hand if you've ever heard it before. It's Romans 8:28. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. Now, how many of you have heard that verse before? Many, 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 many times. If you have any Christian friends or go to church, we often hear that verse. And often when people are saying it, they're using it when someone is in pain. They want to encourage them and say, like, don't feel bad. It'll be okay. But when I grew up in church, and so though I didn't know Jesus, I knew everything about him. I knew all of the verses backwards and forward. I lived the good life that I needed to. But when I first got saved, one of the very first books I started reading was Romans. And when I got to this verse, I read it. And then, does anyone know what the verse after it says? I didn't either. So the verse after it, it says, and we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his Son, Jesus Christ. And when I read that for the first time after I got saved, I was so blown away that I had never heard this verse after, because that verse after is the definition of good. That many of us, when we hear that verse or share the first one of all things will work for your good if you love God, we hear that and think, okay, this situation's gonna end and I'm gonna feel happy. I'm gonna feel comforted. I'm gonna feel everything's fine. But the verse after that defines what good is says good is anything that brings us to the likeness of Jesus Christ. Now, I have another verse in 1 Peter 1, verse 6. And along with that of what the definition of good is, knowing that it means anything that brings us to the likeness of Jesus Christ. This verse says, and it's talking to, before this verse, it's sharing about different trials and tribulations that people have gone through. And it says, in this we rejoice, though now for a little while you have been grieved in many trials of all kinds, so that your faith, which is of greater worth than gold, will be proven genuine, that it may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. So That verse again defines what good is, that, and what is going to bring good. That often we hear this a lot, that, okay, we should expect trials. We're Christians. We should know that things are going to come that are hard. But we say that and say that and say that. But something God challenged me and still constantly challenges me, because I'm human and I often forget his challenges, is that not just do I keep moving forward when a trial comes, but do I desire purification and beautification to meet my King enough that I welcome whatever God defines as good? So I'm finishing up with that. I had more written, but I feel like that's what I need to leave with you. But the three things that I just want you to keep in your mind as after I've shared, and then also as the other women share, and just as we fellowship, is what kind of bride are you? And are you ready to meet your King? And the second thing is, what is your definition of good? And then lastly, knowing, because this is so, so important for us to know, especially because this very thing is what the devil is going to attack again and again and again, is that our desires as women are of God and part of his character. Because the devil wants to come and tell you you're too complicated, you're not beautiful, no one needs you, you shouldn't need to be needed, you shouldn't want to be beautiful, or he wants to tell you beauty is the only thing you need. Or being a mother and having children is the only thing you need. Or being loved by a man is the only thing that you need. And so all of those good, good desires from God's heart have to be purified and also sat by the Word of God to make sure that he searches our hearts and that he shows us what it looks like to live purely with a longing to be loved, and what it looks like to live purely with a longing to be beautiful. And so I just leave you with that as the other women come to share. And we're also, when you leave later today, we've made copies of just the thing that I read, so that if there's any of you that wants to go back and read it again, it's not, I wrote it by my hand, but God wrote it through my heart. So that's the only reason it's not for you to see my writing, but just to see the story and the visual of how we should be as God's bride.